This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here with Sam Harrop, MW and Fault Expert. How are you, Sam?
I'm very well, thanks, Chris.
We're at the International Wine Competitions tasting at the moment, and you're the man who manages the Faults Clinic.
Well, that's part of my role. I'm co-chairman, so yep. I get to taste all of the wines that get judged out by the various panels we have. I taste them again with the other four co-chairmen. But in addition, I also look after the faults, basically analysing hundreds of wines that get rejected from the competition for various faults. What I then try to do is classify those various faults to come up with some trends for the industry to help winemakers improve their winemaking, packaging, approach to the market effectively to come up with better quality, better value wines.
Knowing quite a bit about faults, how did you get this knowledge? You know, where did you start out and, you know, quickly, how did you get here?
Well, when I started off as a winemaker in New Zealand. I went to Lincoln University. I then was a winemaking cadet at Villa Maria. For 3 years. It was a very interesting role that took me throughout, from sales to viticulture to winemaking. So I got to see all aspects of the business. It was fascinating. I then went on an overseas vintage, like a lot of New Zealand winemakers do, to California, and got the bug for travel and decided to head to Europe, and somehow ended up in England. Found a role at Marks & Spencer's as a winemaker for Marks & Spencer's, which took me all over the world, selecting, blending, sourcing wines for Marks & Spencer's, who effectively have exclusive, an entire product range that's exclusive. So there was a lot of blending, a lot of technical work. And to answer the question, how did I get interested in faults from that sort of brief CV? At Marks & Spencer's, part of my role was quality control. And I always, from day one of studying winemaking, I always had a fascination in faults. Primarily because I think you see, with faults, there's almost a contradiction in some respects. You know, to one man, a fault is evil, and to another man, the same compound is beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, and I often, in England in particular, I often found wine experts smelling a wine, tasting wine, saying, this is fantastic. And as a New World winemaker, trained to, you know, produce sterile, almost hygienic wine styles, using all the technology and all the tricks, I got a little sort of curious about how one man can think, or one woman can think, what I see as a faulty wine can be so beautiful. And it's true, there is a bridge, really, and it is a fine line between pleasure and pain. So that got me interested.
Okay, you might hear a bit of popping noise and a bit, maybe even a bit of singing, because we're at the Barbican Centre in the background, so it's just for the listeners. So far, the faults, you did a big report a couple of years ago. Is it every year that you do a report for the International Wine Competition?
Well, that was the plan when we started 3 years ago. If we go back a step, I mean, I came on board as a co-chairman 3 years ago, and before that, the faults were analysed, but very in a very simple fashion. It was pretty much just cork taint.
Yeah.
There was a lack of technical sort of expertise in the chairman sort of role, and when I came on board as a winemaker, I thought, hey, what a great opportunity. Well, you know, we taste 13,000 wines over 2 weeks. It's phenomenal. It's the biggest wine competition in the world. And it was just a great opportunity to get those trends for the industry. So I decided to, you know, get in there a little further and not just look at cork taint, start to look at Brett, Brettanomyces, which is a yeast that is very tolerant to alcohol and sulfur dioxide. That is, I believe, to be a massive problem with the industry right now. Sulfides, or reduction, is often is the term that's used, is a huge problem. In fact, bigger than, in some instances, I think, bigger than cork taint. I think in the past, what I found from my analysis is that we, in 2005, before I came on board, cork taint rate was around just over 6%. It varied from year to year. When I came on board the first year, in 2006, we found the cork taint halved. And so all of a sudden, I'm thinking, how can this happen, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, from one year to the next. I mean, the cork industry isn't that proactive, right?
Yeah.
And so it got me thinking, well, actually one of the problems is that because faults are so difficult for consumers and even for experts to understand, a lot of faults just get clumped in the cork taint category.
Yep.
I'm not saying that there isn't a huge problem with cork taint. We all know there is a big problem. And I don't defend the cork industry very often, I've got to say. But the fact is that my research has shown that cork taint isn't as big an issue as it perhaps was suggested to be in the past. And some of these other faults, like Brettanomyces sulfide, and and sulfide can come in a lot of different shapes and forms as well, but a lot of these other faults can actually be classified as cork taint. So that's my role, to sort of try as best I can to categorize the faults accurately. It's sensory based, so it's never going to be 100%. Answer your question. Sorry, I went off on a bit of a diatribe there. We did a report in the first year. It's a sensitive issue. A lot of people picked up on the analysis and ran with it, and there was a bit of hyperbole and actually in the national media in the UK and all around the world. So I decided to just hang 10 for the second year, develop a strategy for communicating this information, and just hang 10. And we're going to launch the analysis this year from 2008 International Wine Challenge as a single year, but also for the last 3 years, so that we can actually start to identify some trends from year to year.
Oh, okay.
So it has more resonance in effect.
Is there any wee trends that you want to give us now?
Yeah, the biggest trend, and it's a big concern, is that excessive sulfide, which, H2S is the classic sulfide, isn't it, with smells like egg. But the mercaptans, are effectively cauliflower, vegetable flavors, complex sulfides. And what we're finding as a category, excessive sulfides in the wine, where indeed these off flavors dominate to such an extent where you can't pick up any fruit, they become ugly in essence, that is actually bigger than cork taint. In the first 2 days of the challenge this year, we're finding that sulfides are a bigger issue than cork taint. Now, what that actually suggests is that winemaking is a serious issue of winemaking. And I've been thinking about this over the last few years, and I believe that with the movement towards these new world techniques in the old world, i.e. reductive winemaking, hygienic winemaking, making fruit-driven, intense styles of wine, the winemakers, they're trying hard, but they're actually forgetting to look after perhaps the yeast, giving nutrients to the yeast,
or maybe, okay.
And what that actually results in is these excessive sulfides, because the yeast struggles through fermentation.
Then you just get stuck fermentation.
That's also a problem. We've seen increases in volatile acidity over the last 3 years as well, and that of course during a stuck ferment you get higher volatile acidity, but also you get sulfides. But no, what I'm talking about, health effectively ferments that go to dryness, but the wine is full of sulfites because there wasn't the necessary nutrients for that yeast to perform effectively. Effectively, the yeast was stressed and produces these sulfites, which if they're not treated effectively in the winery, they can complex and then you just can't get rid of them. So effectively, the old world winemakers, they're trying hard, but perhaps they need to focus in on a couple of key areas of fermentation.
It's not just because they're using too much sulfur dioxide in the field to protect the grapes and then bringing them into the winery.
Absolutely. I mean, I focused on nutrients here. That's one part of it. It's an important part of it, but you're right. It's the whole reductive approach to winemaking as well. And, of course, sulfur dioxide in the vineyard is the start of it, or the reductive approach, ascorbic acid as well.
Vitamin C is ascorbic acid, isn't it?
Yeah, it's used a lot more throughout the winemaking. And so what you're effectively doing by using sulfur dioxide and ascorbic acid is scavenging the oxygen, so there's very little oxygen. Now, yeasts actually need oxygen to reproduce. And to have a healthy ferment also, you need a lot of a large yeast population. And if you don't, the yeast population isn't high enough, the yeast will struggle at some stage during the fermentation with or without the necessary amounts of nutrients. So that's something that's also forgotten. You can, by protecting your juice too much, you can effectively make the yeast more stressed, and that can result in sulfides as well.
And the reason they're protecting the juice from the oxygen is to emphasize the fruit, isn't it?
Absolutely. You get these wonderful thiol characters, certainly in aromatic white varieties, by protecting the wine from from oxygen. But what I'm suggesting is you can go too far. I mean, the classic for thiol production is obviously, you know, New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what's interesting, I mean, if forget faults for 1 second, but if you look to Chile and Sauvignon Blanc from Chile nowadays, I mean, the aromatic profile of these wines is very similar to New Zealand. It's a winemaking character. Of course, New Zealand has something special. We all know that, whether it's the soil, the sun, a lack of ozone, you know, who knows. But the world is catching up to New Zealand in terms of aromatics.
Yeah, I've had some very good South African Savvies.
Absolutely.
As well.
And Australia too. Adelaide Hills, that's what we've found at this tasting this year, is some of the aromatic whites are just fantastic. Coming back to faults for a second, if we just say that the New World is actually moving towards more towards this reductive approach, there are also pitfalls in that process as well, and we are starting to see reduction issues with screw cap.
Yeah, I was going to say, because a lot of people talk about the fact that there's no oxygen getting through into the screw cap, and that some people talk about the development of sulfur because of the screw cap. The faults you're getting with the sulfur issues, are they under cork or under screw cap dominated?
Okay, we're looking at sulfides on a number of levels. Effectively, we look at the closure when a wine is rejected for showing excessive sulfides. We look at the closure. Effectively, we're categorizing them to three categories. So we're looking at screw cap, we're looking at natural cork, and then we're just looking at the wine itself. So I'll give you an example. A wine is rejected for showing excessive sulfides, as a vegetable character on the nose and very little fruit. Clearly, the mercaptans have taken control of the wine.
Mercaptans are the
complex sulfides, yeah.
Yeah, they're the cauliflowers, the garlic.
Absolute onion, all that sort of thing. They can express themselves in almost a burnt sort of rubber character in extreme, not attractive. So the wine's been rejected. It's a screw cap wine. I taste it out the back, I record that detail, and I ask for another bottle. If the second bottle shows the same character, it's the batch. Okay, the batch is faulty. We have a rule in the International Wine Challenge, 2 strikes and you're out. If 2 of the wines are faulty, then it's rejected from the competition. But of course, we have to give the benefit of the doubt. If the first bottle's faulty, we ask for a second and give them a chance. So in that instance, the screw cap is creating an environment, an extremely reductive environment, and if the wine is not prepared properly before bottling, the sulfides can develop in bottle, because it's screw cap's extremely reductive seal, more so than cork actually. And so winemakers can treat the wine in a number of manners, a number of ways to reduce the chance of that sulfide development after bottling. You can monitor the dissolved oxygen and make sure that the DO is not too low before you bottle. You can add copper, which isn't something I support, but it's used extensively just before bottling in the New World.
That creates copper sulfite, doesn't it? Which that you can then, it's like a fining agent.
Exactly. It fines out of solution, and then you rack the wine off the sediment. It takes the precursors and the sulfides out of solution. But it doesn't work at all on complex sulfides. So you've got to get, it only takes the free sulfides out.
Oh, okay, yep.
So you've got to get onto it early. So, you know, there's other techniques as well.
Just on that, so
yep.
Free sulfides, you get some free sulfides in a bottle, they get to develop and they develop more complexity, and then they develop these onion cauliflower flavors, and they're the mercaptans.
Mm. Correct, yeah. Well, and on that point, and this is fascinating, you know, because there would be a lot of your listeners right now thinking, well, but hey, isn't great Chablis sort of all about these types of characters?
Minerality.
Exactly. You know, and I've looked at Chablis with a lot of interest, because when I was at M&S, I used to look after it. It was one of my areas of responsibility. And this is where it becomes a little hypocritical in a sense, because, and coming back to what I said very early in the interview about, you know, one man's pleasure is another man's poison, you know, I mean, Chablis, if you go to Chablis, the winemakers will talk of terroir and this mineral terroir. For me, this mineral terroir almost verges on cauliflower in some instances. And to me, it can also be a fault in Chablis, but it's a little more accepted by the trade, because it is the style. It's Typicity. Always been the style. It's typicity, it's terroir. But still, I believe it becomes a fault when it dominates in Chablis. Okay, it needs a certain level of fresh fruit to support it. It's all about balance, and that's very much the approach we take to defining wine quality in the International Wine Challenge. It's all about balance. So you can have a little bit of Brettanomyces or volatile phenols from Brettanomyces. You can have a little bit of sulfides, if they're the right type of sulfides for the wine style. You can have a little bit of VA, if it's the right sort of wine style. For example, Pinot Noir can handle a little bit of VA. It's
volatile
terrific.
Acidity,
but
yep.
It's all about balance, and it needs the fresh fruit, the stable fruit, to support it. Now, you might have a lot of your listeners who are Australian, New Zealand, or New World winemakers who may disagree with that, because in wine competitions in the New World, they have a much tougher approach to assessing faults. If the wine shows any volatile phenols, it's kicked out. Sulfides, it's kicked out. They're much harder. But we're based in England. We're an international wine competition. We have to consider not just the New World, but the Old World. And the Old World has more minerality. It has more complexity, generally speaking, as a category. And many of these mineral and complexing characters are the same compounds that the Australians and New Zealanders are knocking out for faults. So it's very polarized, and we have to find middle ground, which is really what we strive to do. It's a complex area, but it's a fascinating area as well.
Just to wrap up, what sort of numbers in terms of faults, what are the sort of typical numbers that you're seeing at the moment?
In the last 2 years, we're seeing around 8% of total wines tasted being faulty. 8%, which is huge, really, isn't it? And once again, this is not just all about cork taint. This is about all these other categories I was talking about, sulfides, volatile acidity. You know, we're looking at pinking. We're looking at rot. We're looking at a number of faults.
I've never heard of pinking. What's that?
Well, pinking in white varietals, in particular Sauvignon Blanc and Viognier, tend to show it in warm years from warm regions where effectively it's a oxidation of the anthocyanins, proanthocyanins, I believe.
And going what, a pink colour?
Going a pink colour. So, okay. And it gets worse, and effectively a wine that's pink, it develops in bottling, it will lose part of its freshness. It's a form of oxidation. It's not as bad as just a general sort of oxidation of the wine. It's a much slower process, but we consider it a fault, because if a customer's ordering or buying a Sauvignon Blanc from a retailer, they actually want it to look clear as well.
Color rosé.
Exactly. And believe it or not, color has become more and more important over the years to consumers. You know, in the States in particular, you know, one of the key quality criteria for judges and for consumers alike is the density and the vibrancy of the color, certainly for red wines. And equally for white wines, they want them to be clear, stable, vibrant, not sort of slightly pink or gray as they tend to go under this pinking fault. So yeah, we're looking at everything. So 8% in the last couple of years. Interesting enough, this year in 2008, we're looking at a slightly lower rate, about 7% in the first three days. Now, if one keeps in mind that this is a competition that goes over 2 weeks.
How does it break down within that? You know, what's the rate of TCA, sulfur, pinking, all that sort of stuff?
Well, the first point, as I raised earlier in the interview, is that cork taint is a lot lower than what other studies have shown. We saw in 2006 a cork taint rate for every wine bottled with natural cork, okay, of 2.91%.
Okay. So about 3%, yeah.
3%. So it's a lot lower than, you know, the previously accepted figure of between 5 and 10% that was thrown around for years, isn't it? Now, in 2007, interestingly enough, this increased to 3.29%.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's still a lot lower than what we thought, but it increased last year. We don't know why. I mean, once again, I taste every single fault, so one of the reasons for that is to calibrate the results. Now, a lot of the faults that get sent through for cork taint, I don't actually input into the database because I can't smell the TCA. I'm quite perceptive and sensitive to TCA, but you know, there are judges out there who are more sensitive to it. So our results are quite conservative,
yep.
But we do that. We have to calibrate it by, you know, having one co-chairman effectively entering the data based on their threshold levels. Now, to go to other stats, if we look at this issue of screw cap reduction. Now, I must emphasize, it's not a taint from the screw cap.
Yes.
It's got nothing to do with the actual closure. It's a winemaking issue. The wine has not been prepared properly by the winemaker before bottling with screw, and the very reductive yep. seal of screw caps. So let's get that clear, because don't want your listeners to think that the screw cap is bad. I actually think the screw cap is an amazing closure, and it's no surprise that this year we're seeing more and more entries moving to screw cap. But the winemaker needs to be careful in their preparation, as I touched on earlier. Lush, in 2006, 2.23% of all wines sealed with screw cap, okay, had this reductive
yep.
macapdan character, this onion skin character that we perceived to be a fault. It was too dominant.
Yep.
Okay. In 2007, it's increased to 2.6%, a slight increase. But when you look at the number of wines sold, well, let's just look at the UK. I know your audience is global, but let's just look at the UK. I don't know what the current figure is, but a couple of years ago, it was about 100 million cases consumed annually in the UK. Now, you know, so these are small percentiles, but in that context, big numbers, big bottle numbers for sure.
What about the effect of wines that have sulfur problems that are under a natural cork?
Yeah, well, there's no question that natural cork varies from bottle to bottle. You know, it's not a technical closure, and you do get corks that are more elastic than others or more dense than others, and certainly the more dense corks can result in this reduction issue, much the same as screw cap, effectively.
Less oxygen gets through.
Exactly. So we do see some issue with a reduction, but it's not as significant as the more technical closure of screw cap, because effectively, if the wine is bottled with screw cap in an inadequate condition, too reductive, and there are these precursors for sulfide development post-bottling, you can end up with you will end up with sulfide issues across the entire batch. Well, cork is not technical, it's not consistent like screw cap, but you'll see more variation depending on how the wine is prepared. What I will say, though, is I think the bigger issue with both of them is that there are many, many wines being bottled in a condition that shows excessive sulfides, and they're just going to get worse with either type of closure, effectively. So winemakers really do need to up the ante on their winemaking to reduce the sulfide precursors before bottling.
Now, you talked about it being a winemaker issue with the sulfides. Do you think, for example, different countries who are adopting screw cap are going to have a higher problem rate than, say, more established? Obviously, like countries like New Zealand, who have been using screw cap now for quite a while and have almost completely gone screw cap, do you think they'll have less of an issue than, say, new countries who are just adopting screw cap for the first time? You know, and have you will you be able to break your statistics out by country?
Great question. And in 2006, I did do that particular analysis for the taint rate of Australia versus New Zealand.
Yep.
Okay? I mean, I can break this data down to the nth degree, and by region, by yep. variety, by wine style. I looked at it in this instance, Australia versus New Zealand, just because I wanted to try and compare their averages against the overall average.
Yeah, sure.
What was interesting is that Australia, believe it or not, were higher than the average. That was 2.23.
Yeah.
Okay. New Zealand was well below 1%.
Do you think that's because the winemakers now understand the issues, maybe a bit more education in New Zealand, and as a result they're managing it better?
That's absolutely my view on this particular analysis. New Zealand have been leading the way in screw cap technology, and I think in the early days, that you know, a lot of producers down there would be the first to admit that they didn't have a handle on it, but well, the results show that they are, you know, getting much better at dealing with screw cap, and as a result, the wine quality and the consistency, more importantly, between bottles is much better. You know, Australia, who's also got very technical industry and has a lot of producers who led the way in screw cap, perhaps because it's a bigger region, and it's obviously, it's a massive country with sort of a lot more regions spread out. You know, maybe the communication isn't quite as centralized as they would like, and certainly as New Zealand, in terms of sharing technology, sharing information to improve consistency between bottling. Now, if you look at the old world, and I haven't looked at the old world because the numbers of screw caps are so low, effectively, in this competition. Yeah. I'm not saying our results are statistically significant, by the way, but These are just trends. Now, I think it's going a little too far to analyse the average of the French screw cap issues when there's only been 15 or 20 wines entered into the competition with screw cap. It'd be a little rough to sort of make some calls on that. But there's no question in my mind, coming back to your point, that the longer you work with screw cap, the better you get. You know, it's a technical closure, so it's a learning curve. What I really hope for is that someone in the industry takes the lead on educating producers all around the world to improve their winemaking for screw cap closure. And, you know, there have been organisations that have tried to do this in New Zealand and Australia, but I actually think it's a responsibility of the screw cap manufacturer to invest money in educating all producers who use their closure. It's not good enough to just give the producers a bunch of screw caps and leave them to it. There needs to be a protocol. There needs to be, you know, an educational process in selling that closure. They have a responsibility.
All right, just last question. Do you think that the change of the wadding in the screw cap, where they're going to allow some permeability through the wadding, do you think that'll remove some of the issues with sulfur, or do you think it's better just to sort it out before it gets bottled?
For me, it's best to actually sort it out in the vineyard. And, you know, you've got to look to the soil and the nutrient status of the soil, because that will indirectly reflect the nutrient status in the fruit, and which in turn will lead to nutrient status in the juice, which in turn will create stress on the yeast if there's a deficiency. And it's that sulfide that the yeast produce which can then rear its ugly head further down the line in either an extremely tight natural cork or more often, as the case is, with screw caps. So you've got to go further back. And I take your point, you know, the lining of the screw cap is critical. But that's just one of many factors, you know. I've found with my clients around the world that with the more oxidative varieties like Grenache, that it, perhaps a tin lining is better suited than, you know, the plastic or the Saranex, I think it's called, isn't it, lining, which is a little more oxidative, which I tend to use for the more reductive varietals such as Sauvignon Blanc. I'd never use tin on Sauvignon Blanc for sure, because it would create an extremely reductive environment, which could then lead on to these sulfides developing.
Okay, Sam, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thanks very much for your time.
No problems.